Hibiscus cinema is satisfying, son.
Yes.
But you did mention the other day that there was a time when you were quite troubled about him. And I wanted to ask you if your concern for him, when he seemed to be quite out of things at Alderdice, had any influence on what you did, on your change of direction.
You well, no, I think I was very, very pleased that my life had been forced to take a change of direction because of recognizing what was going on with the fix. I probably would have not given it up. I'd have still gone on and would have been very, very torn about it. I'm very grateful that I was not faced with that kind of a decision, because I might have made the wrong decision in order to meet my own needs, which would have resulted in a real conflict. Our concerns with Vix manifested, let's see, how would I want to phrase this? Where our concerns with Vix really began developing was because of what happened to him academically. He just was sliding through, and we were always concerned. For instance, he has an excellent ear for French, and he was always practically failing. We had him tutored in French.
This doesn't sound like your
thing. And tutor couldn't understand why he wasn't an A student. Really feel that because Milton is a French linguist, Milton speaks French just exquisitely with a real accent. When we've been in France, I mean, Milton's French has been commented on by natives. So perhaps this was a form of the rebellion there too. On Vix's part. The math, Vix was always having to be tutored in math and always blocking off. This
is hardly was in keeping with the
Yeah, well, this
beginning.
Is all part of it. But this math thing, I think, I don't know, but I believe had to do with, he was part of that shotgun approach to math with accelerated program, and he began to feel inadequate, and he pulled away from that. There again, he was tutored, thought, well, like he should be making A's, but we have realized this with Vix, that anything Vix really wants to do, Vix can do. Anything that he is really not concerned about, he'll pull away and just give it. The barest attention to it. I think, too, it was hard for him up at Alderdice because so many of the faculty knew us or knew of us. And this came about in the classroom quite frequently. Oh, you're Milton Sussman's son. Oh, you're Minnie. Well, now, Milton Sussman's son should be acting this way, or Minnie Sussman's son should... Well, this is very rough. This is something that we cannot prevent, couldn't prevent. Today,
it was almost like your brother and sisters following you.
That's right. That's right. Today, he is so proud of the fact that wherever he goes, someone has known about his father or has known about me. He called the other day. He's up at Glens Falls, New York, with his. Congregation, where he takes over as of August 1st. But he was telling us that some woman had, a member of his congregation, came to him with a clipping from, I think it's the Jewish Post or something like that. It's a New York Anglo-Jewish weekly that had something in there, clipped from Milt's column. One was the fact that Milton, there was a something, a Milt's column written by the editor of the Chronicle, commenting on Milton's 40 years as a columnist in the Anglo-Jewish communications. And also, at the same place, apparently, an item of Milton's relating to Brooks and his being ordained and his having a congregation in Glens Falls. Oh. So Bix was very, very pleased about that, the kind of connection there. And
but in high school it must have been.
That's right. Today, I mean, once he got away from Pittsburgh, where he was suddenly on his own, and like at Ohio University, where he blossomed, he was no one's son. And also, he is no more of a rat race person than his father and mother. Milton and I are both competitive and are aggressive. And Bix is the same way, but we do not respond to pressures. We pull away from pressure situations. And Bix is the same way. Now, Alderdice was a pressure situation and an aggressively competitive kind of situation, as you know. Ohio University wasn't that, and we've all often felt that perhaps the best thing in the world that ever happened to Bix was that he did not reach his potential at Alderdice, because then he would have been headed for Harvard, where Milton had gone, which would have been perhaps the worst place in the world for Brooks at that particular time in his life. A little bit of the same thing began happening at Hebrew Union College, where there was this digging to be the top man, you know, and this, that kind of thing. And Brooks pulls away from that kind of situation.
But he did all right. But I was interested in your decision, that you were more at peace with yourself, with your new position in Pittsburgh, and having given up the great deal of traveling involved with National Council.
Yes. Well, when I think an awful lot had to do with this was the fact that I had the Greater Pittsburgh Guild for the Blind. What would have happened to me, how I would have reacted if I hadn't had this very satisfying and very gratifying experience.
So this was really fortunate.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It was most...
Personally fulfilling.
It was fortuitous, and it was also such a glorious, glorious experience. I think that it influenced Bix's life and influenced Ardale's life, because they would come over to pick me up at the office sometimes, and Bix would be exposed to to all these people. I mean, he'd be introduced, Dale would be introduced, and they would see what was being done, and they would hear me talking about it. And I think that I know that it influenced Dale.
Tell me about Dale. How old was she when you met her?
She was a sophomore in high school. She was at Winchester, and Bix was a junior. They had met at a student association of the United Nations. One of these, city things or district things. And they began liking each other very much. They were both, interestingly enough, at that time, now that I look at it, they were both shy, reserved persons. And they met each other. Now, Bix had pulled away from any schoolgirl girl. Would have no parts of him. He felt very uncomfortable with them. But Dale, although coming from Squirrel Hill, was not Squirrel Hill. And at first I didn't think she had too much on the ball. I really wasn't interested in her at all. And I began, of course, I think maybe the mother-son bit too, because she was the first of his girls. He always brought his girls home. I always got along very well with him, but I had nothing to say to Dale at first. Mm-hmm. And she'd come from a very, very sheltered and protected atmosphere, in an atmosphere where women just didn't do anything professionally or even do too much intellectually. as she was graduating, she too had felt that she didn't have too much to offer, that she was a poor student. She felt that she was low man on the totem pole academically. Her mother's insistence, she went to Pine Manor Junior College, where her mother had gone.
When did she finish high school?
She finished the year after Brooks did. She's a year younger than Brooks.
Okay. And we're talking about what year? When did Brooks finish?
Vix was graduated from Alderdice somewhere around, I think it was 65. So Dale was graduated in 66. She wanted to go to Ohio University, where Brooks was. But she had to go to Pine Manor, and she hated it there. And I remember her coming over and talking with me one day while she was at Pine Manor. She was home on vacation. And she was talking about the things that she was interested in or what she might do, and seemed to have no goal whatsoever. It was going to be the arty-tarty kind of a thing, you know, with the, maybe a little bit of decorating and floral businesses and so forth. She had talent, but had and has talent with artistically. Of course, as I found out about that young woman, there isn't a thing that she can't do. She is just the most competent, capable person with so many.
But all this talent was hidden in high school years.
And but she began, and we were talking about what I was doing, and she told me a year or so later that this had a great influence on her, and having been over, and this is when she decided to go into special ed. And when she transferred to Ohio University, she went into special education. She was at Ohio University for just 1 year because Vix was graduated. And Vix was graduated, I believe, June 10th and June 21st. They were married. And they spent their honeymoon driving to Cincinnati because he had to start school the next day. She then transferred to the University of Cincinnati. And but in the meantime, she had been making such fabulous grades, both at Ohio University. She was graduated from Cincinnati cum laude.
Isn't that great?
And she started to, she got a job. She was one of the few who got a job in special ed. And found this going rough at first. And she was with them 6 weeks, and they had gotten the children just to where she was able to work with them. And the Cincinnati school system went bankrupt, and they were having to leave go all of those who weren't tenured. And Dale was let go, and the school librarian took her job. She was just crushed by it.
Oh.
But then she got another job a couple weeks later because her principal had recommended her so highly. But this was such an impossible situation. These were youngsters from 11 to 15 who were retarded. And they had had 8 teachers in the space of 2 months, so you can imagine how difficult
Here's
they were.
Young
and she's a tiny little thing. She's only about 5, she's only about 5'1", a most attractive, very vivid-looking young woman. And that was so difficult for her that she stopped. Then she was asked to teach at a Catholic school that had become non-sectarian, and they were in learning, this was in learning disabilities with dyslexia. Dale finished, they had taught there for 1 semester, but she did not find it the least bit satisfying because with the way it was being done at this school, with these children who had dyslexia, so everything had to be understated in a very, very calm, nothing to stimulate, nothing to activate the student, because the student had to be kept at a very low level.
Okay.
This was the approach. Well, Dale found, and the voice had to be practically in whispers. Well, Dale found that extremely difficult and very unhappy with it. She was out of school then. She did nothing for a while. She took up jewelry making, and she did some of these other kinds of things. And she decided to go back to get her master's. And she was accepted at Xavier University, in their graduate school for the Montessori program. And the motivating force there was a Hilda Rothschild, who was one of the Rothschilds. She was a German refugee. And just a tremendous, tremendous human being. And Dale got her master's in Montessori, and she developed certain kinds of techniques and program material that Hilda Rothschild wanted her to develop commercially, because they were so excited. This is the kind of exciting, creative person that she is.
Sounds that she's the kind of daughter you would have chosen.
Oh, she is the child of my spirit, if not of my flesh. She is just tremendous, and very, very sensitive, very perceptive. And the relationship between these two, and I speak with fingers crossed, because my God, today you speak about someone getting or being a great marriage, and the next day there's a divorce. But hopefully with them, it's been, they've survived five rough, difficult years.
Plus the long years that they knew each other before.
And I don't think that Bix really could have weathered it at the college, because there were a lot of stresses there, and things that he wasn't particularly happy about. But having Dale, who was so tremendous, made his life a very, very good one. But when he was considering congregations, one of the things that he was concerned about was that there be an opportunity for Dale to practice her profession. And this was one reason why he debated really about accepting Glens Falls. He was offered some other things that they were considering, he and Dale. But apparently the two of them decided on this, and as he said, "Well, you know, Mom, Dale is resourceful. Dale will find something to do on this kind of thing." They didn't want a family yet, because Dale wanted to complete her education. And also she felt that when Bix started his congregational life, that she should be available and not tied down with a small infant.
So she definitely feels he's a great support to him.
Oh, yes. He said that when he's called us several times since he's been up at Glens Falls, I mean, to share all of his excitements. And he was talking about people whom he had met, but he's recognizing the fact that he will never have the kind of friendships in the Rabbinate that he was able to have as a student or as a non-public person. But there's certain things he's not going to be able to share with a friend. But he said, "Of course, what makes it easy for me is that Dale and I are friends." So this is the kind of relationship that they have. And we also, when we were in Springfield, Ohio, visiting our cousins this past weekend, we met their new rabbi, who was a classmate of Brooks's. We had never heard Brooks mention him, so apparently they weren't friends, but just classmates. And this young man unsolicitedly started talking about how great Bix was. Now, he didn't have to please us, because we were not his congregants. But the fact that, and how he knew this, that Bix had was considered outstanding, which was something that came as a surprise to us, because we had never gotten this feeling from Brooks.
As parents, you got the problems and insecurities.
That's right. We'd never really heard. We met and had become quite friendly with Bix and Dale's close friends. And they all spoke, you know, admiringly of each other, because certain people tend to go with each other. But to hear it from this young man, about whom Bix hadn't thought too much, for him to say this, and he said that he had been in a human relations class. Brooks, well, this was the class that Brooks was primarily interested in. where counseling was involved. And this young rabbi told us that as far as the student body was concerned, that Brooks was considered to be much more knowledgeable than the instructor, than the professor.
In this, what was this?
In counseling and in human relations. Vix's thesis was ministerial guidelines in unwanted pregnancies. It happened that when Vix went to a Hebrew Union, this was at the beginning of all the problems with the Vietnam War, the Draven. And he and a very young man who had become quickly became a close friend of his, set up a draft information service on the University of Cincinnati campus. And they were the managers of it.
So and he was a counselor.
As a result of this draft information thing, he began being exposed to a lot of other problems. He began being exposed to the problems of homosexuality, drugs, and unwanted pregnancies. And when he decided to do his dissertation, or his thesis on unwanted pregnancies, he had to have a rabbinical background, rabbinic law, but he also had to be an experiential thing. He went down to Planned Parenthood and became a counselor there, first as a volunteer and then as a paid person. And he was also served at this, we didn't know anything about it. We found out a lot of this business of the boards he was on when he read the biographical data on him that he had to prepare for his interviews for possible congregational
jobs. That's
very
interesting. He was been advising on unwanted pregnancies. Now, he must have received, I imagine from you and Milton, a very wholesome outlook on sex.
I should hope so.
Well, how did that happen? I mean, how did your mother certainly seem very shy? How were you educated about sex?
I guess I picked things. I've often thought about that. Trying to remember whether anyone ever really told me about things. No one ever did. I picked it up, I guess, through osmosis. I apparently understood what people were saying and their references. I never had any sex education, none whatsoever. I guess maybe I just was plain. My father and mother loved each other very, very much. But we didn't see caresses. But we never heard my mother, and I'm just realizing it now as I'm talking to you. We never heard my mother talk about the woes of being a woman, the hardships of being a woman, what a woman had to go through, what with all the sex demands, or the problems of having a child and the pains of childbirth. We never heard anything like that.
Nor menstrual problems.
Never heard anything. I mean, so that this must have been the real thing as far as we're concerned. I'm just realizing it now as I'm talking to you that this must have been this
kind of thing. There were no old wives' tales to overcome.
No, that's right. So that, I mean, I remember when Mildred was about 15 or 16 and I was home from college, my mother, who was a very progressive and modern person, but still with certain inhibitions, mother spoke to me about speaking to Mildred about mm-hmm. sex education. She said, I know that I should do it, but I'm just too self-conscious and uncomfortable about it. Would you? So this is typical of my mother.
But you don't remember her telling her...
Oh, my mother never said a word to me. Oh, no. Oh, heavens no. Not at any time to this day. You've never talked about sex with my mother. And you've never told a dirty story in front of my mother. he never made reference. Although Milton's been able to get away with a lot of things with my mother, and my mother will sort of, you know, sort of titter a bit and then look self-conscious about it. But this is that.
You also mentioned how hard the long years of waiting to get married were with the sexual attitude to them. Did you feel strongly that sex was a part of marriage?
Oh, yes, very definitely. But I think that the reason that my sisters and I always remained what so-called good girls and did not engage in any sexual acts before marriage was because fearful of possibly becoming pregnant and the disgrace with me to our parents. It didn't do anything that would disgrace them or cause them any kinds of unhappiness as far as being exposed to public talk. But it wasn't because of any taboos. Oh yes, wait a minute, I do think there are taboos. My religious and moral taboos, yes. And if I had a daughter, I think I would find it very difficult to accept the fact that she was living with a young man without benefit of clergy. I would find it difficult, but I would do it. I would accept it. Because to me, it's much more important that to keep up communications. I would try to influence her and say something, but never to the extent of where it would mean any open rift. And I would accept that young man in my home. I think I might find it a little difficult. But that, too, I probably would learn to live with, having them share the same room in my home.
Under my roof. That would be pretty difficult.
I think it would be very difficult. But if it meant that that was the only way my daughter would come home, I would do it. But there is a big but. The young man would have to be someone whom I considered a decent human being. If it were riffraff, if it was someone whom I felt was objectionable in himself, this I could not accept that.
Hopefully you wouldn't have to.
Hopefully
but,
it wouldn't
but
have
we
to.
Were talking about how Bix obviously had this very wholesome attitude, and by the time he was a Hebrew in college, he was the sex counselor.
And I gather, though, from the things that he and Dale have said, I know that he talked to me, and she said something just before they were married. They came home a spring, they were being married in June, and they came home spring vacation. And Dale's grandmother was one of the patron saints of Planned Parenthood, Bess Anathan, Mrs. Simon J. Anathan. And her mother, Mrs. Joel Spear, was also on the board of Planned Parenthood. And Dale came home to go down to Planned Parenthood for counseling on birth control, and was fitted with a diaphragm. I mean, they had told us this. Then, just a night or so before the marriage, Bix comes home, just explosive. That Dale hadn't been practicing using the diaphragm, and she didn't know how to do it, and her mother was having to show her how to do it again. And he said, suppose she didn't know, then, and that's all we'd need is to have a baby right away. So apparently, they had not had sexual relations during this period, and they went together for a very long time, which was most unusual for his generation, and what was not unusual for my generation.
But maybe not so unusual that he absorbed your values and feelings about the sanctity.
Well, we didn't talk about the sanctity of marriage. I mean, it wasn't... That sounds...
He didn't talk about
that term, sanctity of marriage, it sounds so ooky to me. I mean, it's...
Goody-goody.
Goody-goody, I mean, and unctuous. It just has an oleaginous sound to it that just disturbs me. You don't think of it in those terms. And we never talked about it in that terms. Nor did I ever talk to him about about these kinds of things, about marrying a virgin or anything like that. I do know that his father spoke with him a couple times about sex. But this had been done with Milton's father. His father and mother had been separated when Milton was about 5 or 6. And on one of his father's trips back to Pittsburgh, when Milton was just approaching puberty, one of his fond memories of his father was the fact that he was staying with his father at the hotel, and his father talked to him about sex. And Brooks and Milton did the same thing with Brooks. He did it one time, I think, when Brooks was about 11 or 12, and then when